It's time for Americans to grow up and become financially responsible.
Let's talk about something important.
If you're in it for the money, that's not a bad thing.
Do you realize how much money he just saved us?
This is The Financial Physician with Lou Scatigna.
The Financial Physician. It's the fastest hour in Money Talk Radio.
It's also my pleasure to see to it that decent, hardworking people in this community aren't robbed blind by a pack of money-mad pirates.
This is financial advice you can take to the bank.
He's your money man.
Show me the money.
Your source for straightforward, no-nonsense financial advice.
Bring me your money questions because I'm here to help.
And now, here he is, the financial physician, America's money doctor, Lou Scatigna.
Good morning, my friends. How are you today on this very chilly, cold, mid-January weekend here on the Jersey Shore? Lou Scatigna here, certified financial planner and your money doctor. Each and every Sunday live right here on WOBM 92.7 Sunday mornings, 7 to 9 a.m. or anytime at the podcast at thefinancialphysician.com. Don't care if you're listening live or if you're listening to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us for our information-packed two-hour show. How are you doing today, Paul?
Doing good, Lou.
I heard there was a winner of the $1.3 billion lottery. Was it you?
Was not me.
Well, it wasn't me either. I think that's a good thing.
Yes.
You know, it could ruin your life, you know.
You hear stories all the time.
Yeah, yeah, it could ruin your life in so many different ways, although I take the chance. I think. Think about all the good stuff you could do with that kind of money.
Just a little piece of it.
Yeah. The big winner, though, is the government, because they're going to get half of it, especially if you take the cash option, which I would take. The person who won lives in Maine. And they do have a state income tax there. So, let's just use New Jersey. If you want a New Jersey, you would pay, 10% state income tax on it? In addition to the highest tax rate, you're going to be paying 50% of what you win to the state and federal government. So I'm sure the government's very happy that someone finally won and they're going to get their piece. It wasn't me. I think the mega millions now is 20 million. You know, it's funny, I never play the lottery, but when it gets 700 million, I got to get a ticket. Like winning 50 million wouldn't change your life, right? It's got to be a few hundred million before I'm even interested. And that's, it's just for fun. You know, you're not going to win, but it's just for fun. For a couple of days, you could dream. We do an office pool. So we all say we're not coming in Monday because we're going to all be rich, that kind of thing. Anyway, Paul, there's so much to talk about today. I've been so amped up for this program. I couldn't sleep this morning. I was up early. I was up 4 o'clock. Just chomping at the bit to come in. There's so much to talk about this week. We're going to talk a lot about, politically, a lot of stuff's happening. The last few weeks, we've been talking and listening to the show, mostly financial stuff. Long-term listeners to the show know, it's a financial show. You know, we talk financial issues, personal finance, markets, and economy. We're going to do that again today. But we also talk current events and politics. It all goes together. It's all part of our lives, and politics affects our money and so forth. So we mix it all together. A lot of people like the political stuff. I could tell by your emails. And some of you were a little disappointed the last 2 weeks that I wasn't really more political on the program. That's what they tune in for, especially my wife. She's the first one to tell me, Lou, you're losing it. where are you? People tune in to hear what you want to think about all the stuff that's going on in politics. So we're going to have a lot of politics to talk about today as the show progresses. I don't know how I'm even going to get through half of this stuff that I want to talk about today. It's going to be virtually impossible. If I had a four-hour program today, I still don't think I would cover it all. But we're going to do the best we can. Of course, as always, if you want to chime in on the show, you got a personal finance question or something I can help you with, 732-237-9626 is the call number. All right, let's start talking about I want to talk about the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And whenever you walk into a bank, you see that plaque on the wall. And that plaque on the wall is supposed to make you confident that your money is safe. And if that bank fails, the FDIC is going to come in and give you all your money back, assuming you stay within FDIC limits. And I've said in the past that it's a psychop. That, you know, it really wouldn't matter in a real systemic financial crisis. And that I wouldn't have my life savings in any big bank. I'm not even sure if I'd even have it in smaller community banks anymore either, especially what's going on with the economy and the debt situation and everything else. But most people feel confident when they put their money in the bank that it'll be there for them. And let's talk about the FDIC. Is it the government? Well, it's not the government. FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, is an insurance company. It's sanctioned by the government, but banks pay insurance premiums to the FDIC. That's how they get funded. And theoretically, if a bank fails, the money would be used in that insurance pool to pay back depositors. And that's really, if a small bank fails, if a community bank fails, you know, with $1 billion, $2 billion, FDIC is viable. They're going to come in and they're going to make you whole. They're going to sell off the assets to a bigger bank. And that's fine. And that's where the FDIC really works. And a number of banks have failed over the years, and they've done a great job in walking in there and making depositors whole. But if you have a systemic banking crisis where the whole system is failing, and banks the size of Bank of America or Wells Fargo or something goes under, you're in big trouble. So let's talk about what FDIC is supposed to insure. It's supposed to insure a bank account up to $250,000. Now, if you have an IRA account, you could have two accounts in that bank. You could have an IRA that's insured for $250,000. You could have a personal account that's insured for $250,000. Your spouse could have an account insured for $250,000. So you could theoretically have $750,000 in your bank, and if the FDIC performs like it promises it is, you get your money back. Now, what doesn't FDIC insure? Well, if you go into a bank and you open up a stock account, you know, most banks now have that gentleman or young lady in the corner office that they point you to when they see you have a lot of money on deposit to try to sell you an annuity or mutual funds or some kind of financial planning product. Well, FDIC does not cover that stuff, obviously. It doesn't cover stock investments. It doesn't cover bond investments or mutual funds, annuities, municipal securities. Anything you have in your safe deposit box is not FDIC insured. For the last few weeks, I don't know if I'll get to it today, but I have a segment I want to do on what to put in the safe deposit box and what not to put in it. I don't have a safe deposit box, and when we talk about that subject, I'll tell you why. So the only thing that the banks supposedly insure is deposits in the bank. Now, just realize that when you make a deposit in the bank, it's not in the bank. I mean, it's not in that branch office on Route 37 here in Toms River when you put the money in there. It's gone. It's lent out 9 or 10 times, and it's very complicated how credit creation is done, and I don't want to get into that, but it's not there. It's gone. It's in someone's mortgage, or it's loaned out for credit cards or cars or something like that. So it's very important that you don't have run-on banks where people want their money out because it's almost impossible to get it out. Now, if you see the holidays were just over. Many of us watch It's a Wonderful Life, and you saw how the savings and loan people started getting their money, wanted to get their money out. They were panicking, and Jimmy Stewart was out there saying, look, you know, your savings is in his house and here and, you know, so forth and so on. What can you get by with? Because that money disappears once you put it in the bank. And now you are a creditor of the bank. You have lent the bank money. You did not make a deposit. And this is very important to understand that you don't just put the money in the bank and you can take it out anytime you want. Now, normally you could, but in the problem we're talking about, and I'm going to play some audio for you that I've secured that are going to blow your mind and make you think twice about your savings in a bank. Now, I got to be very careful, all right? Because I've been talking about this for some time, and it's caused local banks a lot of problems. When I've told people not to keep your life savings in banks, that there's a potential for a failure, systemic risk, and people go into a bank and take out their $250,000 and mention that this guy on the radio told me to do that, it's caused me some problems. Let's just say that, okay? Bankers and I don't get along very well. So I got to be always got to be careful. But the fact is, you know, I tell it to you straight here on the Financial Physician. It's financial advice you could take to the bank. You remember our opening just said that? I got to change that. You don't want to take it to the bank after what I'm going to talk about. All right. But the problem is if everybody wanted to take their money out of the bank, they got scared. You'd have a run on the bank, and the banking system wouldn't be able to handle it. The banking system works fine when, you know, very few people want to take their money out at the same time. People say, well, you know, it's FDIC insured. So when people were going to these big banks and taking their money out, the branch manager of the bank, you got to understand that the branch managers of these branches of banks, they get compensated based on how much assets is in their branch. So if they're able to get more people deposit money in their branch, if they make more loans, their bonuses are determined by that. So it distresses a bank manager when you pull your money out of that bank. All right? It's true of the financial services in general, you know. You know, my clients, if they pull money out of their accounts, I make less money because I charge fees on that, right? So, you know, that's true of the entire financial system. Nobody likes to see assets disappear from their institution. But certainly branch managers don't when their compensation is linked to it. So, you know, I get calls or emails from people saying, oh, I took my money out of the bank. Lou, I took your advice. You know, I put it in a community bank. I put it in the U.S. Treasury money market, or I brought it to you. But the fact is that they weren't happy with me. And they asked me why I'm doing it. Not that it's any of their business, but they want to know. And they tell them why. Well, we can't fail. We're FDIC insured. Well, I did some research recently. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, in their reserve fund, the reserve fund that's used to pay off depositors, If there's a problem at the bank, was $125 billion. There's $9 trillion insured deposits in banks. So I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but if I do the math, what is it, something like 2% or something like that of deposits are insured that before the FDIC runs out? Now, some people say, look, the U.S. government would never let the FDIC go bankrupt and the Federal Reserve would step in. Okay, the Federal Reserve comes in and prints $9 trillion. Yeah, you'll get your money back, but what it will be worth, right? But just I want you to keep following me on this, okay? The FDIC, the bank says, will insure your money under any circumstance. But I've procured... And I got this from InfoWars, where the FDIC had a meeting, I think it was in November, and it was a meeting of, I forgot the committee in there, I got it right here. The FDIC officials recently discussed how to deal with the next approaching market collapse and hide alarming data from depositors to prevent bank runs. The FDIC Systemic Resolution Advisory Committee held a meeting in November to discuss how the next market crash would occur and what steps would need to be taken to ensure that everybody tries not to ensure not everybody tries pulling their money out of the financial system at the same time. Now, I have two segments here I'm going to play for you. Listen to what. Now, this is the FDIC itself. This is the FDIC. And this is what they had to say in a recent meeting.
It should be accessible when people need to know, but I don't think you have much hope of reaching a public that doesn't have a professional need to know. I almost think you'd scare the public if you put this out. Like, why are they telling me this? Should I be concerned about my bank? Like, my insurance company doesn't tell me what they're doing with my assets. They just assume they're going to pay my claim. Right? I think you've got to think of the unintended consequences of taking a public that has more full faith and confidence in the banking system than maybe people in this room do.
Wait. Did you just hear that? That maybe the public has more faith in the FDIC than the people in this room. And they giggled. Did you hear that? I'm going to play that again. I'm going to go back a little bit here. Let's see if I could do that. I mean, you got to hear this. I mean, this blew my mind when I heard this.
Tell me what they're doing with my assets. They just assume they're going to pay my claim. Right? I think you've got to think of the unintended consequences of taking a public that has more full faith and confidence in the banking system than maybe people in this room do. That we want them to have full faith and confidence in the banking system. They know the FDIC insurance is there. They know it works. They put their money in. They get their money out. So there's a select crowd of people that are in the institutional side. And if they want to understand this, they're going to find a way to understand this. There's a bunch of law firms represented in this room. There's a bunch of people that charge them by the hour, a lot of money to explain this all to them. And it's fine. I don't have a problem with that. And they all have huge staffs. But I would be careful about the unintended consequences of starting to blast too much of this out in the general public.
All right. So they're trying to say, keep it quiet. Now, they're not saying if this happens. They're saying when the next market happens. And then they talk about bail-in. You've heard the term bailout before. All right, bailout is when the government steps in, the Fed steps in, prints money, and makes the banks whole, like happened in 2008. That's not going to happen again. And I'll read to you, I have in front of me, and I've had this with me since 2012. And it's a report that came out between the FDIC and the Bank of England. And it's entitled, Resolving Globally Active, Systemically Important Financial Institutions. Right? So this is the blueprint of what they would do when these big banks begin to fail. And I'm just going to read part of it because it's very technical. All right? And they talk in a way that you don't realize what they're actually talking about, but I'll tell you. In the executive summary, before we get deep into it, they mention this. The unsecured debt holders can expect that their claims would be written down to reflect any losses that shareholders cannot cover, with some converted partly into equity in order to provide sufficient capital to return the sound businesses of the too-big-to-fail banks, all right? So you're an unsecured creditor. That's what they mean, the depositors. When you hear the term unsecured creditor, that's you if you have money in the bank. Because think about what a creditor is, all right? A creditor is somebody who lent money to somebody else. All right, the bank lends you money on your car. They're the creditor, and you're the debtor. If you can't pay them back, the creditor loses their money, right? Or if they have collateral or something, they could sell the collateral. They'll repossess your car, sell the car, and get some of their money back. But you're an unsecured creditor. You got to get in line. Number two, a number of years back, I don't know if it was the Dodd-Frank bill for banks, but they got in the bill. The banks got in the bill that the banks, if they owe another bank money, which they all do because they're all they all have derivative bets with each other, that the banks get paid first before the depositors get their money. And you're last in line. You're the unsecured creditor. There is no collateral for you. Right? You don't have any collateral. When you put your money in a bank account in a CD, you don't say, I want to see the collateral to protect me. There is no collateral. What else do they say here? Page 6, paragraph 26. By leaving behind substantial unsecured liabilities and stockholder equity in the receivership, assets transferred to the bridge holding company will significantly exceed its liabilities, resulting in a well-capitalized holding company. Meaning, once they take your money and they don't owe it to you anymore, they're no longer insolvent. To capitalize the new operations, One or more new private entities, the FDIC expects that it will have to look to subordinated debt or even senior secured debt claims as immediate source of capital. And they go on and on here. This is like, I don't know, 40 pages long here. All right. So there is the game plan on how they're going to handle this. So that's called a bail-in. A bail-in is you lost your money or you get stock in the bank. So now the FDIC commissioners who are sitting around laughing about the fact that the public has more faith in the banking system than the people in that room do. This is what they have to say about bail-ins. Let's see. Okay, here we go.
Important that people understand they can be bailed in, but you don't want a huge run on the institution. But they have, I mean, they're going to be. And it could be an early warning signal to the FDIC and the primary regulators when these things happen. And there may be some other prices. This is similar to what Jay was saying in the market that. You can tell whether people understand how the who's going to be protected, who isn't going to be protected. It would be, I think, an interesting study to look at the evolution of market prices in a situation like March of 2020, for example, and see whether people understood what might happen.
Does that make you feel comfortable? Paul, will you feel good with your money in the bank?
Not as much anymore.
Isn't that earth-shattering information? You're not going to hear this on the news. All right. Like I said, I got it from InfoWars. All right. But I didn't hear this. This was in November this meeting went on. And there's a video of it. And they're telling you to your face that your money isn't safe in the bank. Number one, we got to keep it quiet when it starts because we don't want to have the run on the bank. And number two, I don't know if people understand bail-ins and if they understand if their money is safe. And we don't want to... huge run on the institutions. It sounds like they're expecting it soon. So this isn't Lou Scatigner on his dinky radio show and podcast telling you this. This is the FDIC itself. And if that doesn't tell you that you should not have your life savings in these banking institutions, I don't know what else I need to do for you. Now, we've talked about digital currencies and how the Federal Reserve digital currency is starting to come about. They're doing a test with 12 financial institutions right now. And, you know, the world wants us to have digital currency so we can't get out of the system. Now you're trapped, you see? And even now you're trapped. Due to the Bank Secrecy Act, go take $100,000 out of your bank account. Try to do that. See what happens to you. You say, I just heard this radio show. I just heard the FDIC saying that, you know, I'm going to get bailed in and it maybe runs on the bank. Could I have $100,000 in cash, please? Just do it. I've done this, not to the extent of $100,000. I did it with $17,000. You should have seen what happened. Not to mention the reports that are going to be filed on you with the government. The Bank Secrecy Act. I'm going to touch on it. On a future show, I'll spend a little more time with it. But, you know, you can't take all your money out of the bank in one day without all kinds of stuff happening. You know, you're limited to $10,000. A lot of people think that you can't deposit more than $10,000 cash without alarms going off because maybe it's money laundering or tax evasion or drug dealing or terrorism financing, whatever it is. But you can't take $10,000 or more out of the bank without alarm bells going off. And you can't structure it in a way where you go, I'll take $9,000 out today and I'll take $5,000 out tomorrow. That's called structuring. You'll be in trouble for that too. You can't go to one branch and take out $9,000 and go to another branch and take out $9,000 the same day. They don't want you taking your money out of the bank because that's what causes bank runs. They want to limit that. But I love one of our listeners or any of our listeners to go into their bank any given day and don't take out your $100,000 because that's going to be impossible. They're going to say, whoa, 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 what are you doing? They're going to say, you can't take out $100,000. Why? I put $100,000 in the bank. It's my money, isn't it? It's not your money. What you put in that bank, it's not your money anymore. Trust me on this one. It's the bank's. If you go in a bank and say, look, I have $25,000 in my savings account. I like it in hundreds, please. Watch what happens. I should really do that. I should go in there and take $25,000 out. Have somebody come in with a camera with me and watch what happens. The first thing that's going to happen, take a withdrawal slip and write $25,000 on it. And walk up to the teller, give them your license and the deposit slip, the withdrawal slip, and watch what happens. First of all, the teller is going to turn white. It's going to turn green. And they're going to say, oh, wait a second. And then they're going to bring you to the branch manager's office. He's going to say, sit down. What are you doing? Well, I have $25,000 in this bank. I want to take it out. You can't take it out. We don't have that much cash here. What do you mean you don't have any cash here? You're a bank. Well, we just keep enough money in here to, cash paychecks and stuff. I mean, we don't keep that much money in the branch. So you mean to tell me that I can't get my money today? Well, no, you can't. Well, how can I get my money? Well, you got to give us 5-7 days notice on this, and we'd have a Brinks truck come with some cash. But we have to ask you a bunch of questions first. We have to file what's called a cash transaction report, a CTR. Well, what do you mean? Well, we have to tell the government that you're taking over $10,000 out of your account. What do you mean? The first time I heard this, I was kind of blown away by it. This was a long time ago. I understood that if I put cash in the account, that could cause a problem. But you're trying to tell me taking my own money out of my account causes you to make filings with the government? Oh, yes. Oh, certainly. And then we got to ask you a question. Why are you doing it? And what are you going to do with the money? Well, why is that your business, what I do with my money? Because if you don't answer the question to our satisfaction, we have to file a suspicious activity report, a SAR. Well, what do you mean a suspicious activity report? Because I just want my own money? Yes, we're going to file a suspicious activity report with the government. Now, they won't tell you that. They can't tell you that. They have to keep it secret. They can't tell you they're going to file these reports on you. But they're going to. And I asked it. I recently deposited $15,000 in cash. Somebody bought my boat, and they paid me cash in an envelope, $100 bills. So I go into my bank, PNC Bank. They're all the same. I mean, I'm not isolating them. This is no matter where you go. And I said, if I deposit this $15,000, I asked the branch manager, and I've seen her there a number of times. It was in the Stop and Shop here in Tom's River on Route 37. That's where I bank. And I said, well, do you have to file a report on me on this? She goes, I can't tell you. I go, what do you mean you can't tell me? I mean, I want to know before I give you this money, what's going to happen to me? I can't tell you. That's a violation of the law. So I don't know if I should deposit this money or not. Now, I know what's going to happen because I've researched this. I've talked about it on this program for years. I know what's going to happen. That a cash transaction report is going to be filed. Now, I had to answer the question, where did you get the money? Like it's their business. I had to tell her. I sold a boat. Guy paid me cash. All right? So that eliminated, I think, I don't know, the suspicious activity report. But you can't even know that they're going to file this on you. But once we go to digital currencies, you can't even take that money out of the bank. There will be no cash. You are stuck in the banking system. Do you see where this is going? Now, this past week, banks came out and announced their earnings. And while their earnings were pretty good because interest rates were higher, these banks had decent earnings. But they're predicting major defaults of loans in 2023. See, banks have to put money aside. for expected credit losses. And all these big banks came out and started setting aside billions of dollars in reserve because they believe that they're going to be massive defaults on credit cards, on car loans, on mortgages. J.P. Morgan put away $2.3 billion for the quarter for credit losses. That's the largest amount we've seen since 2020 at the throes of the COVID pandemic, right? And this means that they expect credit defaults to increase substantially. And all the banks came out and said the same things. As we go into recession, as the economy continues to decline, and we have a very serious situation now where Americans are more indebted than they ever have been. You know, 15% of car loans are $1,000 a month or more. 15%! That's like a mortgage to own a car, right? People are saying, hey, I can't pay this. I just lost my job. Inflation is killing me. And we're going to see more and more of that. Credit card debt. What do we have here? Let's see if I have it here. Americans are spending $371 more a month because of inflation. And that's obviously Americans were paycheck to paycheck before we had this inflationary spike. Flashing, this is a headline. Flashing red alert. Near record surge in credit card debt just as rates hit an all-time high. Another month, another glaring reminder that most U.S. consumer spending is funded by credit cards. The latest consumer credit report was published by the Fed today at 3 p.m., and it showed that in November, total credit increased by $28 billion to $4.75 trillion. Above the $25 billion that was expected. Americans are borrowing more and more money just to get by. And they're using credit cards to do it. There is no choice to do it otherwise. All their stimulus is gone. Savings rates have hit all-time lows. And credit card use has hit all-time highs. This is not a good thing. And many of you out there are feeling it. Credit card debt alone was up a whopping $16.5 billion in November. 60% higher than October's $10 billion. And the fourth highest monthly print this century. How much can people afford, right, of paying this debt? At the same time, interest on credit cards have hit an all-time high to over 19% on average, with many people paying 25, 28, 29%. Now, I have a credit card, and I'm doing some renovations in my house. And for convenience, I've used the credit card, to purchase the materials and everything else, right? And I pay off my credit card bills. I don't carry a balance. I'm looking at the interest rate on balances on my credit card. It was 28.99%. Now, I have no debt. I have a great credit rating. And this interest that this credit card company wants to charge me on my balance is almost 30%. Now, I'm fortunate enough that I could pay it off. What about the millions and millions of American families who can't, who are paying the minimums and are going to be stuck in debt forever? And these banks are going to pay the price for it because people are just not going to be able to pay for it. We're going to see major spike in bankruptcies, car repossessions, credit cards just, maxed out and nobody paying them. And banks see this coming. That's why they're warning about, having to put money, billions and billions aside for this. Now, that's one problem the banks have. The other problem I had, as I mentioned before, is derivatives, which is never really talked about. And without getting too complicated, derivatives are just bets that banks make with each other. On interest rates, on whether or not a bond's going to default, we can go on how these things work. But they're very unregulated. They're off balance sheet many times. And one of our listeners a few months ago sent me a list of the total amount of derivatives that each bank has. And the numbers are staggering. You got money in Chase Bank, JP Morgan Chase? They have $57 trillion in derivative bets. I didn't say $57 million. I didn't say $57 billion. I said $57 trillion. What happens if those bets start to go wrong? It wouldn't take much for JP Morgan and your Chase Bank account to be bankrupt. Goldman Sachs Bank. These are the two biggest Wall Street companies, by the way. $50 trillion. Citibank, $46 trillion. Bank of America. Oh, you got your money in Bank of America? They only have $23 trillion in derivative bets. What can go wrong there? Wells Fargo, $11.5 trillion. HSBC, now we're going down to just $1.5 trillion. And it goes down. PNC Bank, only $562 billion in derivative bets. And it goes down and down and down. There's actually a list here of how many banks are there? 1,000 banks, more than that. I keep going. And they all have, you know, they don't all have. Once we go to 1,253 bank, he goes to zero. And these are really small banks. And this is the systemic banking problem that we talk about that could happen. It's not people not paying their credit cards that are going to do the bank in. It's going to be these derivative bets. So what can you do about this? I mean, if we go into a digital system where cash is no longer valid, we're doomed because we can't get out of the system. All we're going to do is move it. You know, you can write a check. Or wire transfer from Bank of America to Chase Bank. A lot of good that's going to do you, right? If you're just tuning in now and you missed the audio I played about the FDIC saying that the public has more faith in the banking system than the FDIC does, and they laugh in the room, and they tell you what's going to happen to you, that they're worried about runs on banks and bail-ins and so forth, go to the podcast at thefinancialphysician.com and listen to this. If you did hear it, share it with as many people as you can. And if you have your life savings in a bank, I think it's time to give it a second thought that maybe this is not the place I want my money. All right, the phone number here is 732-237-9626. Let's take a quick break. My name is Lou Scatigna. You're listening to The Financial Physician. Don't go away.
Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer, a family-owned and operated premier septic installation and repair company with more than a decade of experience in the septic services. Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer provides full-service maintenance and cleaning services, pumping septic tanks, repairing broken sewer lines, cleaning of grease tanks for restaurants, as well as real estate septic inspections, repairs, and installations. Phone 732-600-8721 or go to jerseyshoreseptic.com to learn more. Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer, top quality work at the most affordable rates.
Although customers were already going online more and more over the past 5 years, the amount of people doing business online has skyrocketed since the pandemic hit. Visit mylocalcustomers.com. Hi, Shawn Michaels to tell you, if you're a business owner here at the Jersey Shore, Town Square can help you find local customers online. Town Square can help you grow your business faster. Premium website services, new leads every day, no contracts, subscriptions you can cancel anytime. Visit mylocalcustomers.com. That's mylocalcustomers.com. For details.
Do you have a home to sell? Do you need to buy a home? Or maybe you would like to consider a career in real estate? Well, you need to contact my brother, Mark Scatigna. He's the broker manager of Coldwell Banker Flanagan Realty on Route 70 in Manchester. Mark has helped so many of my clients with either the sale of their home or to purchase a new home. All of them could not have been happier with his help. What about an exciting new career in real estate? Maybe you're finding you have more time on your hands than you would like to after retiring from your full-time job and are also looking to make some extra income. With flexible hours to still enjoy your free time and income that could be limitless, Mark could train you to be as successful as you would like to be and enjoy a rewarding career in real estate. For help with any of your real estate needs, as well as any information on a career in real estate, call my brother Mark Scatigna at Coldwell Banker Flanagan Realty. His number is 732-657-6200. That's 732-657-6200. Mark Scatigna, Coldwell Banker Flanagan Realty. Give him a call. You'll be happy you did.
I'm Lou Scatigna, certified financial planner, author, president of AFM Investments, and the host of The Financial Physician, heard each Sunday morning 7 to 9 right here on 92.7 WOBM or anytime at thefinancialphysician.com. Don't let interest rates, inflation, and market volatility keep you awake at night. Come to my Toms River office for a no-obligation professional diagnosis of your financial health. I'll review your investments, income taxes, and retirement plan. I'll suggest a comprehensive financial and estate plan that will improve your financial health and, most importantly, lower your financial risk during these uncertain times. If you are retired or plan to retire, I will show you strategies designed to increase your income and protect your estate from nursing home costs. Call us at 732-905-8100 and get on the road to a healthy financial future. That's 732-905-8100. Join me Sunday morning, 7 to 9, for The Financial Physician right here on 92.7 WOBM or listen to the podcast at thefinancialphysician.com. Securities transactions through Lee Baldwin & Company, member of FINRA and SIPC, registered investment advisory service through Fortitude Advisory Group.
Call The Financial Physician now at 732-237-9626. Here's Lou Scatigna.
Welcome back to The Financial Physician. Lou Scatigna here, your host and money doctor, each and every Sunday, 7 to 9 a.m. live right here on 92.7 WOBM on the Jersey Shore or anytime at thefinancialphysician.com. So if you sleep late, you only get to hear part of the show, you go to church early, and you miss any of the program, just go to thefinancialphysician.com where we have the podcast. Paul will have it up right after the show's over. And if you have money in the bank, you're going to want to listen to the first segment of this program. Really stunning audio from the FDIC that really made my ears go up. I'll tell you that. And you're going to want to hear that audio. So if you're just tuning in now, go to thefinancialphysician.com right after the program. And it's the first segment of our program is about the banks, FDIC, and is your money safe in banks? And you make your decision after you listen to what the FDIC has to say. So the podcast always available to you if you want to listen to the program again, listen something over again that you heard on the program, or you just, you know, don't want to listen to the show early on Sunday mornings. You can listen anytime at thefinancialphysician.com. And so many of you do listen to the program on the podcast, and it's growing each and every week. The number one financial podcast at Podomatic. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify, Google. I lost track of the different ways you can go and get us, but just find us at thefinancialphysician.com. I have the link there. Also, love your emails, lou@thefinancialphysician.com. You have a personal finance question I could help you with or something you want me to cover on the show, just send me an email. Love your emails. I respond to each and every one. If I don't, just send it to me again, because just like everybody else, we get so much spam and garbage emails that I just may miss it. All right, let's talk about inflation. It was announced this week. The CPI was much anticipated. And as I told you in the first week of the year, we were talking about our forecast. I expect inflation to moderate in the beginning of this year, and we're starting to see that. The consumer price index came in at 6.5%, meaning that prices today are 6.5% higher than they were in December of last year. And if you believe that, you'll believe anything, but that's what the government's telling us. Part of the reason why we're seeing inflation moderate a little bit is we've seen gasoline and oil prices come down substantially from the high of last year, and gas prices now running around $3.35 a gallon, still substantially higher than when Biden took office, still moderating from where it was. So that goes into the consumer price index. But as I said many times before, don't believe anything the government tells you as far as economic numbers go. But at least the trend is going in the right direction right now. And this is called demand destruction. As things become more expensive, people buy less of it. And we're seeing that certainly in energy prices, where people are not as driving as much. The price of oil was too high. People, you know, would take one trip out to go shopping. They wouldn't go out three times a week or a day or whatever. And there's less demand. You have a lot of manufacturing shutting down around the world because of energy prices. So the demand goes down. So we're seeing energy prices go down. But as the economy implodes, which we're starting to see that now, you're going to see inflation, I believe, may even turn into deflation for a while, where you're going to see actually prices going down. We're going to see major deflation in housing. We're already starting to see major problems in the housing market as mortgage rates have gone up a lot. But it came out at 6.5%. The market seemed to like it, that number. I guess any time when it's going in the right direction, it's a good thing, especially when I said Americans are paying $371 a month more just to get by due to inflation. That number was, I think it was $500 more a month in July of last year. So I guess it's going in the right direction. But the only reason it's going to go in the right direction is because the economy is going to implode. So what do you want? You know, do you want to lose your job but have inflation start going down? I don't know. One thing that's not going down is food inflation. We know that. Everybody's talking about it. Going to the grocery store, your cart's half full with no meat, and it's $150. It's just amazing. You know, egg prices hit $9 a carton in New York last week. I mean, just under $9. Unbelievable. And that has to do with the fact that 57 egg-laying birds have been killed due to bird flu over the last year. And unfortunately, many families are relying on eggs as a source of protein, you know, because red meat, you know, is so expensive nowadays. Now we're seeing the price of eggs skyrocketing. So, you know, you may see deflation in certain things like maybe energy prices, housing. But don't believe you're going to see a significant deflation of grocery prices anytime soon. It's not going to happen. In Ireland, they're raising the price of Guinness. That's not a good thing. Irish people are really up in arms about this. Irish Prime Minister Leo Varadkar, that doesn't sound like an Irish name to me, says a move by Guinness to raise prices of a pint in Ireland would cause financial hardship for many. Only the Irish would say it's going to cause me financial hardship because beer prices are going higher. I can say that. I'm half Irish. So don't get mad at me, all your Irish people out there. So how much are they going to increase a pint? 12 cents. It's going to cause major. How many pints do you have to drink for it to cause major financial hardship to you? Oh, God. Wow. And Heineken, you know, before Guinness did this, Heineken increased their pint by 17 cents. So now, forget energy prices. Who cares about that? Who cares about housing prices and renting? When you're talking about a pint of beer going up, now it's really hitting home, right, for a lot of people. I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, inflation may be easing, but, you know, you're not going to see it in eggs anytime soon. You're not going to see it in butter. I mean, you got eggs are up, what, something like 50%, if not more, in some places 100% year over year. Butter's up 30% year over year. We're starting to see margarine. And vegetable oil, huge price increases. Margarine's up 47% over a year ago. Why? Because margarine, why anybody would use margarine? I don't know. I think it's the most disgusting thing. When we were growing up, margarine was cheaper than butter. And we weren't allowed to have butter in my house. Only my dad could have butter. You know, and that kind of really bothered me because I really like butter. So I would always sneak his butter for my bagel in the morning. I got caught once. I was in big trouble. But anyway, supposedly... margarine. I don't even know what margarine is. It's just oil, I guess. I don't know. But margarine is made with soybeans, oil that's made from grains. And now a lot of the oil, soybean and oil, is being used for green energy, biofuel, right? So now our food is being used for energy, not human energy, but for to make renewable diesel.
So we have to grow more soybeans to do that. So the green economy is causing us to spend more money on margarine and other things like that. Interesting. All right. Janet Yellen came out this week and said that this coming week we're going to hit the debt ceiling again. What is the debt ceiling? The debt ceiling is a misnomer. There's no such thing as a ceiling when you can keep raising it. Right? How many times have they raised the debt ceiling, right? The debt ceiling is supposed to be a way that, Congress will be more disciplined on how they spend money that we don't have, right? I think most of us in our own households have a debt ceiling. There's only so much debt we could take on, right? But what's the use of having a debt ceiling if Congress always votes to increase it? I have a ceiling in my house. I just don't raise it every couple of years. I can't do it, right? Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, previous Federal Reserve chairman, on Friday warned the U.S. will hit its debt limit on Thursday. And then unless Congress takes swift action, the government could be unable to pay its bills by early as June. All right? So what happens is when we hit the debt ceiling, the government goes through all kinds of machinations. They steal the money from the pension system to keep paying our bills until Congress wrangles to get the debt ceiling lifted. If they don't, then they start shutting down discretionary parts of government, and it's a big mess. Because we have a $1.5 trillion, $2 trillion annual deficit. So if we don't fund the debt ceiling and increase it, we can't borrow money to fund our shortages, which means we can't operate the government. So this was her quote, "Failure to meet the government's obligation will cause irreparable harm to the U.S. economy, the livelihoods of all Americans, and the global financial stability." So if the United States doesn't continue to borrow trillions of dollars, go further in debt, and destroy our children's future, probably ours before the children, that the global financial stability will be harmed. I respectfully urge Congress to act promptly to protect the full faith and credit of the United States. So the extraordinary measures the Treasury could take to prolong having to have the debt ceiling raised include halting contributions to certain government pension funds, suspending state and local government series securities, borrowing from money set aside to manage exchange rate fluctuations, and other things. So Congress last voted to lift the debt ceiling December 2021, a little over a year ago. And we go through this dance, you know, every year or two. Now, the problem with this now is that Congress, now run by the Republicans, is really being controlled by 20 of the Freedom Caucus that don't want the debt ceiling raised. They want fiscal responsibility to return to our government. And this has an ominous risk to having this debt ceiling increased. Because obviously there'll be a civil war, you know, amongst Republicans. And we'll have to see how this plays itself out. Will there be a government shutdown come in June? And, you know, it's not – I don't know why to – I got mixed feelings about this. Should they do away with the debt ceiling? What's the use of having it if you're just going to keep raising it and you're going to shut down government and everything else? We're doomed. We might as well just keep spending money we don't have. It's a terrible situation that we're in. It really is. And I don't know if this will portend well for Republicans, though. If you're going to have this battle where it's going to be blaming the Republicans for a government shutdown, you know how it goes. Well, inflation's still a problem, but for the first time in a long time, used car prices are declining. Remember I told you during last year that used car prices were more than new car prices? It was unbelievable. It was something nobody's ever seen before. As the new car prices new cars were hard to come by because of chip shortages and things like that. But the Manheim Used Vehicle Value Index, tracks the auction prices of used cars, plunged the most on record in December. Car prices dropped almost 1% in December from November, but are still 15% higher than a year ago. And a 1% drop in used cars was the largest annualized decline in history. And an economist comes out and says, new inventory is finally starting to build, and that's producing momentum in new car sales, but the momentum appears to be at the expense of used retail. Especially, it's the traditionally used car buyer that's most impacted by payment affordability. So what they're saying here is that car loans have hit the highest rate, interest rate, in more than a decade, and it's causing an affordability crisis in the used car market. And during the virus pandemic, Americans used the most debt to fund record car prices. And now car prices are dropping. And, of course, a lot of people are going to be underwater in their cars. I think something like 50% of car loans are underwater right now because a lot of people have rolled over car loans. And, you know, when you have a seven-year payoff figure, as soon as you write, you know, take the car out of the showroom and drive it down the street, you owe more on the car than the car is worth. So, you know, 2 or 3 years later, you know, car dealers, what they were doing is they were rolling, you're underwater, we'll just roll that deficit into the new debt of the new car. So you're always underwater on your cars. And now as the economy's contracting, and it's only the beginning, wait till you start seeing layoffs start picking up, and the American family is paycheck to paycheck, and the paycheck goes away, and you got massive inflation, well, people are going to stop paying their car payments, and it's happening right now, and it's only going to get worse. And when people realize that, honey, what are we doing with this car? It's worth 20 grand. We owe 30 grand on it. We can't make the $800 a month payment. Just can't make it. So instead of having two cars, let's just have one. Let them take that car. And if you're looking for a business to get into that's going to be recession-proof or depression-proof, go into repo business. You're going to have a lot of work. As a matter of fact, I mentioned on this program last month that that repo company saying they can't keep up with the business. And again, it comes back to debtors and creditors, right? We were talking about that. You're a creditor if you deposit money in a bank, and God knows if you'll get it back someday. Same is true of these banks and finance companies that lent you money to buy a car, right? They're the creditor. You're the lender, and if you can't pay them back, well, at least they have security, collateral, and that's your car. And in the middle of the night, they'll come with a tow truck. You'll wake up in the morning, your car's gone. They're going to sell it at auction and get whatever they can back on the loan. They're going to do the same thing with your house when you can't pay your mortgage. That's called foreclosure, right? Not repossession, but it's the same thing, isn't it? You're going to repossess your house. But banks are smart. Most of the time, they have some collateral on their loans. But you have no collateral on your deposits in the bank. Getting back to the beginning of the show when we talked about is your money safe in the bank. So we have a crushing auto loan crisis going on right now. And as prices are dropping, and used car prices are going to continue to drop because as more and more repossessions hit the market and go to auction, the prices are going to continue to plummet, the opposite of what we saw during the pandemic. And the more car prices go down and the more crushing these auto loans are, you're going to see a wave of repossessions and defaults on loans like we've never seen before. And it's just amazing. I, as a financial planner who meets with people, and I see a new client, and they tell me they can't save any money, and I see, where's your money going? And I look at the debt that they have. They're paying $1,000 a month for car payments. And I told you, some car buyers, 15%, pay over $1,000 a month on one car, which is insane. But for a lot of families, you know, car payments are crushing them. Between car payments and mortgage payments and inflation and everything else. And that's what husband and wife working. What happens when we go into a severe recession or worse and people start to lose their jobs? Not a good scenario, not a good situation. And it's a sad thing. But there's no light at the end of the tunnel here. I mean, whether it's government spending, deficits, our debt, families' debts, corporate debt, the banking system, our fragile political system, which we'll talk about in the second hour. We're in trouble, folks. We are all in trouble. All right, top of the hour, 732-237-9626 is the call number if you want to be part of our program. My name's Lou Skatigna. Be back with you after the top of the hour. It's time for Americans to grow up and become financially responsible.
Let's talk about something important.
If you're in it for the money, that's not a bad thing.
Do you realize how much money he just saved us?
This is The Financial Physician with Lou Skatigna.
The Financial Physician. It's the fastest hour in money talk radio.
It's also my pleasure to see to it that decent, hardworking people in this community aren't robbed blind by a pack of money-mad pirates.
This is financial advice you can take to the bank.
He's your money man.
Show me the money.
Your source for straightforward, no-nonsense financial advice.
Bring me your money questions because I'm here to help.
And now, here he is, the financial physician, America's money doctor, Lou Skatigna.
All right, welcome to hour two of this thing of ours that we call the financial physician. Lou Skatigna here, certified financial planner and your money doctor, each and every Sunday morning live here at 92.7 WOBM here on the Jersey Shore or anytime at thefinancialphysician.com where we have the podcast of the two-hour show. Right after the show is over, the entire show is there for you to download or just listen live there. So many of you do listen to the podcast because you don't want to get up early. Don't blame you. Or you go to church or you're doing other things. You want to listen to it while you're working out at the gym. Don't really care when you listen or how you listen. Just make sure you listen to the full two-hour program each and every Sunday or any day at the podcast at thefinancialphysician.com. And share it. We talk about a lot of things on this show that you're not going to hear elsewhere, that's for sure. And we appreciate you sharing the podcast. That's how the show grows. All right, before we move on to some of the political stuff going on, and there's plenty of it, let's just go over financial markets for the week. The Dow Jones Industrial Average for the week. We're starting off the year pretty good. I mean, 2022 was a disaster for stocks and bonds. And as I mentioned on our review show, a couple of weeks back, 2022, when you look at the performance of the bond market and the stock market together, was the worst year since 1871. No, I didn't say 1971. I said 1871, you know, post-Civil War time. Just dreadful. Just dreadful. Stocks down anywhere between, depending on whether it's the Dow or the NASDAQ, let's say 20-30%. Bonds were down big, depending on what type of bond, what the maturity was. Let's say 15-20%. Just a dreadful, dreadful year. But so far, so good this year as the markets are finding some relief that maybe the inflation spike we've been living through is starting to moderate. In a perverse way, a bad economy is good for the market in some perverse way because it means that the Fed may not have to continue to raise interest rates because inflation should start to subside. And there's some optimism in the new year. For the week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 2%. Year-to-date, up 3.5%. That's only 2 weeks of trading, so that's pretty good. S&P 500, even better, up 2.67%, up 4.16% for the year. NASDAQ, even better, up 4.82% for the year. Now, the NASDAQ was the market that got hurt the worst last year, down 31%. Having a nice little bounce here, up 4.82% for the week, up 5.85% year-to-date. 10-year Treasury bond, which was over 4% not too long ago, is at 3.5%. So bond yields have been going down as the markets are anticipating that the Fed will either pivot or slow down their interest rate increases. Mortgage rates are starting to creep down a little bit. At some point last year, mortgages were over 7%. The national average for a 30-year fixed rate mortgage this week was 6.31%, which is better. Now, I was talking to a mortgage broker this week, a guy I know very well, and I said, boy, how's business? You know, you must be really struggling. He goes, last year was bad. He goes, last year was really bad. He goes, but we're starting to see a significant pickup now. He goes, people, at 6.3 compared to 7.3, it's going in the right direction. People still need housing. They're anticipating that they could refinance in a year or two, so they're still out there buying houses. So he says he's starting to see a little bit more pickup in mortgages, not refinances, but in mortgages in general. Gold and silver are having a wonderful start to the year. Gold is $1,923 an ounce. In October, I think it was 1,618 was the low. So, we're seeing a $300 increase in gold in the last 3 months. As central banks are buying up gold, as people around the world are buying up gold, as they see these digital currencies coming. Just in this year, the first 2 weeks of 2023, gold's up $100 an ounce, which is 5.5%. Silver's at $24.27, still very, very undervalued. This week, China announced that it bought 30 tons of gold in December. China and Russia and these BRIC countries, that this is a big story for 2023, are buying up gold like crazy. Buying up gold like crazy. Because they're going to back this currency that they're going to come up with commodities, gold and silver, and they're going to throw the dollar to the side. And that's another reason why gold and silver are going to do really well. I mean, the dollar is going to go down, and it has been going down the last couple of months. And the question is gold money? A lot of people ask me, is it, you talk about digital currencies, you talk about banks and everything else. Should I put my money in gold? And I think everybody should have some gold and silver in their life. How much should you have? Well, that's based on your own situation. But everybody should have some gold and silver in their life. Now, is gold money? I remember Ron Paul. Now, Ron Paul is a hard asset guy. I mean, he's a guy that always believed gold is money and that that the U.S. dollar is being printed into oblivion, and he believes in having a gold standard. And this is a quote. He's asking Ben Bernanke, who was the Federal Reserve Chairman at the time, Ron Paul was still in Congress. And this is what he asked Bernanke about gold being money.
Gold, well, I pay attention to the price of gold, but I think it reflects a lot of things. It reflects global uncertainties. I think the reason people hold gold is as a protection against what we call tail risk, really, really bad outcomes. And to the extent that the last few years have made people more worried about potential of a major crisis than they have gold as a protection.
Do you think gold is money?
No,
it's not money. Money for 6,000 years, somebody reversed that and eliminated that economic law.
Well, it's an asset. I mean, it's the same. Would you say treasury bills are money? I don't think they're money either, but they're financial assets.
Why do central banks hold it?
Well, it's a form of reserves.
So why don't they hold diamonds?
Well, it's tradition, long-term tradition.
Well, some people still think it's money.
So Ben Bernanke, he was a little deer in the headlights there. If gold is money. I think gold is money. Like you said, it's been money for 6,000 years. Who legislated it out? I don't know. As I said in my prediction show, the first on January 1st, that was on the podcast, and you can go to my website, listen to the whole show. It's very eye-opening, I believe. But I said, this is the year of gold and silver. It's already starting. The all-time high for gold is a little over 2,000. We're at 1923 right now. And I think we're going to see new record highs in gold and silver this year. Again, for many reasons. Geopolitical risk, the BRICS wanting to back their currency, the U.S. dollar reserve currency status being nipped away. A lot of different things. Bitcoin had a good week. I mean, after going down to around 16,000, it's been this year doing pretty good. It hit 21,000 yesterday. This morning I saw it was 20,891. Maybe Bitcoin is bottom for those of you who are into the cryptocurrencies. Oil prices up a little bit last week at $80 a barrel. Gasoline, $3.35, holding steady at this time. All right, so this past week, quite a week in Washington. I found this hard to believe when it came out, but obviously I'm not going to tell you something you don't already know, that they found all these top secret documents in Biden's think tank, whatever that is, and his garage next to his Corvette. I mean, that's going to go down in history as something, right? Oh, yeah, the top secret by his Corvette in his garage. Now they found more documents, I hear, overnight in his library, in his house. I mean, this is a big deal. And it's really a big deal because of what they did to Donald Trump and his. And I'd hate to be Garland. He's in a really tough situation right now because he sicked a special prosecutor on Trump. They raided Mar-a-Lago. And now he's caught between a rock and a hard place because they're saying, hey, all the Republicans are coming out. Where's the raid on Biden? And they knew about this before the election in early November, and they sat on it until now. This is big stuff, people. This is the second time that they suppressed information before an election regarding Biden. First, it was Hunter Biden's laptop with the help of big tech. And now this very, very important information, you would think, was held for 2 months afterwards. And let me tell you what's really happening here, why it's coming out now. The deep state is jettisoning Joe Biden right now. This is what you see happening. This thing doesn't come out right now. This is orchestrated. All right. And you could tell by the way the media is acting on it. Even the media now is questioning him. The first time it came out, they tried to run cover for him. And they tried to say that it's not the same as Donald Trump. It's different. As a matter of fact, you can always count on The View to be very level and very even-handed, right? Joy Behar, who's the one disgusting human being. Everybody on that View is, I don't know who watches it. This is her opinion how Biden's situation is not the same as Trump's.
It should be accessible when people need to know.
No, that's the wrong. That's the FDIC one. That's the one. Let me see. Where do I have it here? Oh, here we go. Okay.
I think that what you just said is that there is differences in what happened.
It's not good.
Well, we all know that Trump is a liar and a thief. You know? We know that. So it's not that big a jump to say that he obstructed and he lied. We don't think that Biden is a liar and a thief, so we give him the benefit of the doubt. That's partly what's going on. But what I think also is going on, no matter what the truth of it is, Whoopi, they will spin it. Bubblehead and Marjorie Taylor and that crowd, Matt Gaetz, you think they're not going to spin this that is just as bad as Trump? And so the lie gets out there, so people believe it, just like that Donaldson person, whatever his name is.
So that's the view. Real even-handed, aren't they? Trump's a liar and a thief. And we know Biden's not a liar. What? This guy's been lying his whole life about everything. And a thief. We're going to find out what kind of thief he is. How about this? All right, so this Biden Center, which I never heard about before. Okay, so this was set up by Pennsylvania University. And as you get deeper into this, it gets pretty wild. After Biden left the vice presidency, he hooked up with Pennsylvania University. And they set up this think tank in Washington. And Biden got this contract with Pennsylvania for, I think it was $900,000 in a year to do a couple of speeches there. So see how it works, how they get paid after they get out of there. All these politicians, right? Right. And then when he said he was running for president, all of a sudden, $50 million plus dollars shows up at the Biden Center from China. And I think 26 million of it was anonymous. Right. So, I mean, there's that China Biden thing again. I mean, this year you're going to learn a lot more about China and Biden. Right. Like, we don't know enough already. So Biden, the 400% increase in donations from China to the Biden Center after he announced his campaign. What do you get for that money? That's what I want to know. What do you get for that money? And, you know, China has given money to universities across this country. Academia in America is awash in Chinese cash. Why is that? Why would China want to invest all this money in our universities? And how do we allow this to happen? Good question. Why would they do that? Anyway, so that's an interesting thing that we saw that. Now, of course, you know, the hypocrisy on this is off the top. It really is. I mean, Biden, you know, last year was on 60 Minutes talking about Trump and having these documents. And you want to talk about hypocritical, and nothing bothers me more than hypocrisy. You know, the hypocrisy of the media, the hypocrisy of celebrities in Hollywood, and politicians. That when somebody else does something, oh, it's terrible, but when they do it, it's fine. All right? Now, this is the definition of hypocrisy.
When you saw the photograph of the top secret documents laid out on the floor at Mar-a-Lago, what did you think to yourself looking at that image? How that could possibly happen? How, why anyone could be that irresponsible? And I thought, what data was in there that may compromise sources and methods? By that I mean names of people who helped, or et cetera. And it's just totally irresponsible.
All right, so it's totally irresponsible. Okay, you know, and of course Biden's not saying anything. I mean, this is a major scandal with these documents. Every day goes by, another, it's more documents in another place. Now, of course, the presidential spokesperson, you know, should, you know, meets with the media every day. And you think she would answer some questions. And she don't want to answer any question regarding this right now. You know, she's referring you. I was watching a press conference on Friday. Every time they asked her a question, she said the exact same thing. And this is what she said.
Just to be prudent here and just to make sure that we are consistent, I would refer you anything that is related to this, to the, as it relates to the review, to the Department of Justice or my colleagues at the White House Counsel office. And this is, we see it as the best way to move forward. We want to respect the process. And so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to refer you to the Department of Justice.
So she repeated that over and over again. I'm going to refer you to the Department of Justice. Now, the Attorney General of the United States had to name a special prosecutor, all right, because he named one for Trump. Now, why didn't he name the special prosecutor in November when he knew about it? Why didn't they raid his many houses? Oh, by the way, how do you have so many houses when you're in government and you work on a – I don't know how that works. But – he had to name a special prosecutor, but this does a number of things. Number one, the Department of Justice now could say, we can't comment on the matter because it's in the hands of the special prosecutor. The White House tells you to go to the DOJ for comment. And the DOJ says, or you have to go to the White House counsel's office. And she mentioned my colleagues in the – she didn't even say to – she never very wandered away from the exact saying of my colleague at the counsel office. So, you know, if a press guy goes there, he sends an email, they don't answer it or whatever. It's never on camera. You don't hear anything. So in essence, they're putting a lid on this right now. But now the special counsel, he could take months, if not years, to investigate this. Look what's happened with Durham investigating the Russia hoax thing. He's been doing this since 2019. Where's the results of this investigation? Certainly they could drag it out until the next presidential election. And everybody is saying, well, it's not the same what Trump did. And where's the picture of all the documents on the floor saying top secret like they did with Trump? They leaked to the media. Where's the SWAT teams, right? Don't you see we have two different systems, one for Democrats, one for Republicans? Where was the raid on Hillary Clinton's house with 33,000 emails on her server? And Americans are fed up with this. Americans want fair treatment under the law, whether you're Democrat or Republican. I mean, should be treated fairly. And if you look at this, who did who was named the special prosecutor for Trump? A Trump-hating prosecutor. Who was named the special prosecutor against Biden? This guy named Herr. Do you know who this guy Herr is? This guy Herr was the partner in the law firm with Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI. This guy Herr was the deputy counsel to Rod Rosenstein when he was acting attorney general, and he's very involved in the Russian hoax, right? So Biden gets a friendly prosecutor. Do you think that this prosecutor is really going to go after, that Biden's going to have anything come out of this? I don't. And I think, actually, that Trump's off the hook now, too, because you can't indict Trump and arrest Trump for the same thing Biden did. Now, it's not the same thing because Trump, as president, had the ability to declassify anything, where Biden, as vice president, did not. And Trump said, everything I had was declassified by me. Biden can't say that, right? So who committed the crime? Now, Kash Patel, most people don't know who Kash Patel is. Kash Patel is was a former federal prosecutor. He worked with Republicans and Devin Nunes on the memo regarding everybody who's involved in a Russian hoax. And Kash Patel was on TV, and he was talking about who this guy Herr is.
The situation where Merrick Garland appoints Herr special counsel, H-U-R. You know who Herr is? Rod Rosenstein's number one lawyer when Rod Rosenstein was the attorney general in charge of the Russiagate investigation, where Devin Nunes and I sent him a dozen subpoenas, and Rosenstein and Herr blockaded the response to those subpoenas because they wanted to cover up the corruption at the FBI and DOJ. They were in on it then, and they're in on it now, which is why I disagree with the appointment of this guy as special counsel. And here's the most important thing I'm going to say tonight. This guy, Herr, needs to be the first one subpoenaed by the new special select committee under Jim Jordan's authority on the weaponization of government. And do you want to know why? Because Herr, we have the receipts, Steve, and we're going to release him later, was sending communications to the Justice Department and Rod Rosenstein's crew arguing against the release of the Nunes memo, saying that it would bastardize and destroy the United States national security apparatus. This guy is a swamp monster of the tier one level. He's a government gangster. He's now in charge of the continued crime scene cover-up, which is why the first congressional subpoena that has to go out for the weaponization of government subcommittee is against Herr.
So, you know, obviously this is part of a cover-up. They named this guy. It's going to shut down all information. You won't hear anything, and nothing's going to come out on it. Now, the reason why I believe this is a deep state takedown of Biden is that you're seeing certain people now turn on him. And one of them that was very interesting was Robert Mueller's pit bull on a special prosecution against Donald Trump and Russian collusion, and that is Andrew Weissmann. This guy is one of the worst prosecutors ever, a deep state Democrat, tried everything he could to go after Trump and everybody around him. And he came out yesterday and said that the White House keeps digging a hole deeper. They have failed to answer so many questions, which is very strange if this is all an innocent mistake. Total number of government docs found and precisely where and what levels of classification, Weissmann said. Why wasn't this all revealed in November or December, he added. So when you start seeing these kind of people starting to come out, this is the deep state getting rid of Joe Biden. Now, do we want to get rid of Joe Biden? I don't know. What happens then? there must be a plan here. Is it Kamala Harris? Well, this is what Kamala Harris had to say. Always interesting to hear her talk.
Let's deal with this.
The viability of President Biden in 2024, your thoughts on that, with given his age, given where we're headed, do you think that he is the right choice for the next president of the United States?
Let me tell you something. Joe Biden is strong, and history is going to show that even just in his 2 years, he has accomplished through his presidency more than most administrations could have hoped for.
Would you consider the job?
Let me tell you something. When you look at, for example, and I think that when we judge any leader, let's judge them on their track record of effectiveness. Many, many leaders said that they were going to pass an infrastructure bill. Joe Biden got it done. Where we're now building back up here in Michigan, the money that's going to come into this state to build back up roads and bridges, we are, because of what we have accomplished under Joe Biden's leadership, going to get lead out of pipes across America, done within the next 10 years because of Joe Biden's leadership.
Is it a job you'd consider in the future?
I am proud to be Joe Biden's vice president, and he has said that he intends to run again, and if he does, I will be running with him.
So, yeah, that's what we'd have if Joey Boy is forced out of office. Now, is this just trying to get him not to run again? I don't know. Maybe that's what this is all about, not replacing him before 2024, just getting him to say, I'm a little too tired, too old for this, and have somebody else run for it? Or are they trying to get rid of him now? I don't know. But, I mean, where are we going to find documents next? I mean, how many places are we going to find it? You know, my theory is that Biden's leaving a trail of classified documents wherever he goes so he could find his way back. Maybe that's trying to find his way home. I don't know. Trump's off the hook. Looks like it. Now, the new Congress run by Kevin McCarthy is in session. Wasted no time in passing some bills with zero Democratic participation. And it doesn't really matter what the bill is. Let's look at the first thing they did, I think. They voted, House Republicans, unanimously to repeal funding for 87,000 new IRS agents. Now, listen to this. 221 Republicans, all of them voted for it. 210 Democrats all voted against it. What does that tell you? I mean, this is what we're going to see in Congress. The Democrats are never going to vote with Republicans, right? Not one on almost anything, regardless of what it is. It passed. Now, everything's got to get through the Senate, and nobody goes off the reservation there either. Maybe Joe Manchin. I don't know. But they got a 51-49 majority, so who knows what will happen there. But the so-called Inflation Reduction Act gave like $80 billion to the IRS to hire 87,000 new agents. So then the House voted to create a new select committee on the weaponization of the federal government. What does this mean? This means that, you know, you have the Department of Justice going after their political opponents and such. Now, you think that everybody in Congress wouldn't want weaponization of the DOJ and the FBI and the CIA, right? Well, the vote was 221 to 211, right? Get used to it. This is what it's going to be like. Now, Jim Jordan came out and he talked about the weaponization of government, and he couldn't get one Democrat to vote for it.
Chairing the Judiciary Committee, and there's a new subcommittee just approved to investigate what's called the weaponization of the federal government. Yeah. Can you give me an example of how the administration has, as you say, weaponized an agency?
Many.
and give you many. The Department of Justice, targeted parents, treated parents as domestic terrorists who simply showed up at school board meeting to advocate for their son or daughters. The FBI paid Twitter $3 million, not one, not two, but $3 million to censor conservatives. And of course, the Department of Homeland Security was trying to set up a disinformation governance board because they should be the arbiters of what can be said and what can't be said. I mean, this is crazy stuff. So we have had now dozens of whistleblowers from the FBI come to us, FBI agents come to us and tell us just how political things are at that particular agency. So, yeah, we know what's going on. And frankly, the American people have common sense. They can step back and look. Okay, look at the double standard. Look at the most recent one. Look how President Trump was treated with so-called classified documents being at his residence, is what we've been told, versus the classified documents that were found at the Biden Center. So I think the country can see it. This is why we need to get into this, because government is not supposed to be picking winners and losers,
right,
and functioning in a political fashion like that.
So, makes sense to me. But it doesn't make sense to the Democrat. And Peter Schiff has been out. Not Peter Schiff, Adam Schiff. He's not too happy about this, and he sounds like he's a little bit worried about it.
Last time Republicans were in charge of the House, Kevin McCarthy pushed to form another bogus select committee, that one on Benghazi. He did so, as he admitted, to tear down Hillary Clinton's numbers, a patently political exercise. Now McCarthy is at it again, pushed into forming this bogus subcommittee by the QAnon members of his own conference. Now, he sacrificed a lot in his bid for speaker. That was his choice. But now the American people are going to pay the price in the form of a body blow to our national security.
So he's a little nervous about what's going to come out with him on this. What else did they vote on this week? Oh, they voted on an act that if a baby survives an abortion, that baby would get medical care to survive. All right? That you wouldn't just let it die on the table. Now, first of all, you could argue, why would anybody be allowed to have an abortion where a baby can be viable when aborted? I mean, that in of itself is bad enough. But you know what the vote was? 221 Republicans against 211 Democrats. Every single Democrat voted against this bill. How is that possible? How could there be not one Democrat at a 211 that believe it's wrong that to have a baby be born alive be killed? You want to talk about the party of evil? Not even something as simple as that can you get one Democrat to vote for? This is outrageous. And if that doesn't tell you where the Democratic Party is right now, and if I was a Democrat, I'd be ashamed to be part of that party. I would. Now, Jerry Nadler, little dumpy Jerry Nadler, argued on the House floor that taking babies to the hospital who survive an abortion procedure endangers the baby. You can't make this stuff up.
The problem with this bill is not that it makes anything, that it provides any new protection for infants. The problem with this bill is that it endangers some infants by stating that that infant must immediately be brought to the hospital, where, depending on the circumstances, that may be the right thing to do for the health and survival of that infant, or it may not. That is the problem with this bill. It directs and mandates a certain medical care which may not be appropriate, which may be endanger the life of an infant in certain circumstances. That's why we oppose this bill.
Paul, help me with this. I mean, how does taking a baby that's born, was aborted but still alive, taking it for medical treatment, endangering that baby versus leaving it to die on the table? Am I missing something? He's just shaking his head. He don't want to say anything. First of all, Jerry, you made a mistake right there. You said a word you should never say when talking about abortion. You called it an infant. It's not an infant, remember? That would be a mission. They're babies, not clumps of cells, you remember, all right? I mean, it's evil enough that we have abortion at a stage where a child can be viable. How many weeks does that have to be before a child's viable being aborted? That in itself is gruesome enough. But to say you can't give it. Let's see what the Senate does on this. Is every single senator, Democratic senator, going to vote against this? I'm blown away by it. I mean, I know how whacked the Dems are, but this is pure evil. And every single one of them. But I got to give, I'm going to give Kevin McCarthy the benefit of the doubt here. He is a rhino, but he's not the Speaker of the House. You know who the Speaker of the House is, Paul? President Trump. He's the Speaker of the House. You know, there was a lot of talk that if the Republicans won, this was a year ago, right, that they could make Donald Trump the Speaker of the House because you don't have to be a congressperson to be Speaker of the House. But Donald Trump didn't want it. You know, he always wants to be number one. He wants to be chairman of the board. He doesn't want to be, you know, third in line or anything like that. He wants to be president again. So he never saw the House speakership as his calling. But he didn't need to be speaker to be speaker. He controls the Freedom Caucus. So in essence, he is the speaker because one of the agreements that were made to get Kevin McCarthy in is all it takes is one congressman to vote him out or at least have a vote on it where he won't get the votes necessary because the 20 will vote against him. So Kevin McCarthy is speaker in name only. It's the MAGA movement, those loyal to Trump, that control everything. So, you know, Kevin McCarthy can't take a bathroom break without getting permission from the Freedom Caucus right now. So that's interesting, what's going on. So you're going to see a lot more of these votes. You're going to see the Democrats doing what they do well. They stick together. You got to give them credit for that. But it just blows me away. I just can't believe that not one Democrat in the House believes taking care of a baby that survives abortion is worth doing. I just don't get it. What else is crazy out there? We got a lot of craziness to talk about in the remaining time that we have. There's not enough time on the show. We really could go 4 hours today. Now they want to take away your gas stove. You heard that one today, right? This week. All of a sudden, a gas stove is poisonous. It's indoor pollution. You know what this is. This is a Trojan horse. This is just about getting rid of. This is the Green New Deal stuff. Getting rid of using fossil fuels. Close of global warming and all that stuff. So now they're saying that children with asthma, it's being caused by the gas stove that you have in your house. And it's funny, you know, all these media came out at the same time talking about all these studies about we have to get rid of gas stoves. Now, this isn't going to happen. This is, did you know that having a gas stove is like idling your car in the house?
Science is showing us that having a gas stove in a small apartment, especially with bad ventilation, it's like having a car idling there. And if you have young kids, it can affect cognitive abilities and as well as asthma.
So this is from CNN, by the way. I would tell this gentleman who just said that on CNN to pull his car into his house and idle it for a couple hours and see if it's the same thing as cooking Sunday gravy. See if you have the same result. You know what it's about now. They're going to shift gears. You know, this is what they do. They do something that they know nobody's going to. You can't, you know, 40% of or 50% of stoves in America are gas. You know, you're not going to be able to ban that. You're not going to criminalize 40% of the people. But now they're going to say, well, it's not about the stoves. It's about ventilation. So now we want to regulate the air in your house. Another thing. Boy, you know, I haven't talked a lot about vaccines the last few weeks. You know, we talked a lot about it last year. A lot of people were coming out saying this stuff is poison. It's not good for you. It doesn't work. It causes strokes. It causes clots, that it should be stopped immediately. Well, this past week, some things came out I thought were very interesting. We should talk about it. The CDC now is going to investigate the link between Pfizer's mRNA COVID vaccine and strokes in people age 65 and older. Why not start investigating all these heart attacks that these young kids are having? All right, there's no talk about that. Why not investigate all these health issues? Not just strokes, but now they're going to look at strokes. These clots are causing strokes, but 65 and older only? I don't understand. You're going to see a big turn here now, because it's hard to ignore the health problems that are happening now. Here's a headline. COVID vaccines are obviously dangerous and should be halted immediately, say senior Swedish doctors. They're saying they're obviously dangerous. There should be immediate halt because of the strokes that are happening, the heart attacks in young people. FDA advisor says young and healthy people shouldn't get the latest booster. Should only be used for older individuals at high risk. That's coming out now. More than 270 deaths in U.S. athletes after vaccination. Peer-reviewed letter. Over 270 athletes and former athletes in the United States have died from cardiac arrest or other serious issues after taking COVID-19 vaccines, according to data from a recent peer-reviewed letter to the other. Authored by structured biologist Pangis Polykritis and board-certified internist and cardiologist Dr. Peter McCullough, the letter cited data found that from 2021 to 2022, at least 1,616 cardiac arrests or other major medical issues have been globally documented in vaccinated athletes, with 1,114 of those being fatal. And you're seeing this in Europe. You're seeing this everywhere. Headline, actuaries raise alarm that Australians are unexpectedly dying at an exaggerated rate. According to analysis from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, an extra 15,400 Australians died in the first 4 months of 2022. Excess deaths being reported by insurance companies, funeral homes. Listen to some of these. I could do 3 hours of this show just reading headlines about the vaccine. Now, we saw, you know, last week, Buffalo Bills player Hamlin dropped almost dead from a heart attack if it wasn't for immediate. By the way, it's a miracle that this guy is out. He may even show up at the game today. Just goes to show you the power of 300 million people praying for you. I really believe that. I mean, this guy is a miracle. I mean, that this guy went from, he had two cardiac arrests that night. And he, they said his heart didn't beat for 9 minutes. And he has no brain damage. It's just quite amazing. I listen to these headlines. Now, this is only a fraction. I mean, this is just this week. News editor for LA Times dies unexpectedly at 33. MMA rising star Victoria Lee, dead at 18. And I'm not going into it. I'm just reading the headlines. Air Force offensive lineman, 21, dies after experiencing a medical emergency on his way to class. 20-year-old Colorado College tennis player dies in his sleep. 17-year-old high school student in Ohio dies suddenly from cardiac arrest while at school. 16-year-old basketball player suffers stroke while in school. I mean, I can go on and on. How about this one? Lisa Marie Presley, dead at 54 from cardiac arrest. You know, one thing that's not said in these articles? Vaccine status. Never mentioned. Never mentioned in any news report. Lisa Marie Presley was 54. These are the people you know about. Headline, British cardiologist Dr. Asim Malhotra tells BBC 30,000 excess deaths this year, most likely linked to mRNA vaccines. And maybe as much as 50,000. The excess deaths in the UK last year was the worst in 50 years. Why aren't they stopping these vaccines with all this news out? Why do they continue to push them? COVID is nothing now. Well, I mean, look, if you're 80 years old or you got issues, you get COVID, well, just like the flu, you die. But they're still pushing these vaccines with all this news that's out. FDA and CDC vaccine experts now claim they are outraged at government and Moderna for allegedly hiding key data about updated booster effectiveness and safety. Air Force Academy offensive lineman dies walking to class. Oh, how about this? In California now, it's illegal for doctors to give you any adverse information on vaccines. They could lose their law license by talking about ivermectin, or by talking about any side effects from taking a vaccine. Doctors are allowed to say that. I've never taken a vaccine, and I'm so glad I haven't. But 80% of Americans have. And now we're hearing about, this is the biggest drug trial in the history of the world. And now we're seeing, especially younger people, I could imagine having a child that was forced to get vaccinated to go to college and losing them. Just dreadful. All right, let's take a quick break. 732-237-9626 if you want to be part of the program. My name is Lou Skotigna. Don't go away.
Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer, a family-owned and operated premier septic installation and repair company with more than a decade of experience in the septic services. Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer provides full-service maintenance and cleaning services, pumping septic tanks, repairing broken sewer lines, cleaning of grease tanks for restaurants, as well as real estate septic inspections, repairs, and installations. Phone 732-600-8721 or go to jerseyshoreseptic.com to learn more. Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer, top-quality work at the most affordable rates.
I'm Lou Skotigna, certified financial planner, author, president of AFM Investments, and the host of The Financial Physician, heard each Sunday morning 7 to 9 right here on 92.7 WOBM or anytime at thefinancialphysician.com. Don't let interest rates, inflation, and market volatility keep you awake at night. Come to my Toms River office for a no-obligation professional diagnosis of your financial health. I'll review your investments, income taxes, and retirement plan. I'll suggest a comprehensive financial and estate plan that will improve your financial health and, most importantly, lower your financial risk during these uncertain times. If you are retired or plan to retire, I will show you strategies designed to increase your income and protect your estate from nursing home costs. Call us at 732-905-8100 and get on the road to a healthy financial future. That's 732-905-8100. Join me Sunday morning, 7 to 9 for The Financial Physician right here on 92.7 WOBM or listen to the podcast at thefinancialphysician.com. Securities transactions through Lee Baldwin and Company, member of FINRA and SIPC, registered investment advisory service through Fortitude Advisory Group.
Call The Financial Physician now at 732-237-9626. Here's Lou Skotigna.
All right. Boy, that's a fast 2 hours, 10 minutes left in our program. It goes so fast here on The Financial Physician. If you've missed any of our very important program, this is one of the most important programs I think we've done in a long time. The first hour, we talked about the safety of our money in the banks, audio from FDIC that is damning. If you think your money's safe at a bank, you want to listen to the first hour of this program. We talked a lot about a lot of stuff on today's program. You don't want to miss it. And before the break, we're talking about vaccines and all these deaths and things that are happening. A lead author of a peer-reviewed research, a doctor came out. His name is Dr. Freeman, Joseph Freeman. He came out recently and said, you got to stop these vaccines right now.
Hello, my name is Dr. Joseph Freeman. I'm an emergency physician based in Louisiana. In addition, I am a clinical scientist. I was the lead author of a peer-reviewed study that reanalyzed the original Pfizer and Moderna clinical trials for the messenger RNA COVID-19 vaccines. We found the vaccine increased serious adverse events at a rate of 1 in 800. At the time of publication, my co-authors and I did not believe our single study warranted the withdrawal of the messenger RNA vaccines from the market. However, since its publication, multiple new pieces of evidence have come to light, and this has caused me to reevaluate my position. An article published in the BMJ regarding the FDA's own observational surveillance data found the messenger RNAs were associated with multiple of the exact same serious adverse events identified in our original study. But the FDA had failed to inform the public of these findings. In addition, now we have multiple autopsy studies that find essentially conclusive evidence that the vaccines are inducing sudden cardiac deaths, yet the rate of these vaccine-induced deaths remains unknown. While many nations that have been using the messenger RNA vaccines have experienced an increase in excess mortality, more people dying than should be expected from past years. And this correlates in time with the initial vaccine rollout and then with the subsequent booster campaigns. Nations with higher messenger RNA vaccine uptake have correlations with higher rates of excess mortality. While the cause of this excess mortality is not known, researchers analyzing this data were unable to identify any other reasonable cause of the excess death other than the vaccines. Given now the Omicron variant is less virulent and is able to evade much of the protection offered by the vaccines, this creates a situation where the benefits of the vaccine have been dramatically reduced for hospitalization and death. Together, this information calls into question if the vaccine's benefits are outweighing the harm. I believe, given the information, the messenger RNA vaccines need to be withdrawn from the market until new randomized controlled trials can clearly demonstrate the benefits of the vaccine outweigh the serious harm we now know the vaccines are causing.
All right, so this is from a doctor who did the study on it. He'll probably lose his license now. The hospital will probably get rid of him. Can't say that stuff. Although now it seems that now that they got the shot in billions of people around the world, not to mention the reproductive issues that women are starting to find now, miscarriages, stillbirths. Think about it. If you want to eliminate a species, right, you know, just kill them off with a virus and a vaccine and then destroy their ability to reproduce. That's what I would do if I tried to get rid of a species, right? The World Health Organization shared a video on Twitter promoting the claim that anti-vaccine activism is deadlier than global terrorism, nuclear proliferation, and gun violence. Yeah, really. Now, I told you, before the break and now, and I got a doctor on, all talking about this excess deaths, all these people having heart attacks and dropping dead and these kids and these strokes and everything else. And this is the World Health Organization. This is what they have to say about anybody who's against these vaccines.
We have to recognize that anti-vaccine activism, which I actually call anti-science aggression, has now become a major killing force globally. During the COVID pandemic in the United States, 200,000 Americans needlessly lost their lives because they refused a COVID vaccine, even after vaccines became widely available. And now the anti-vaccine activism is expanding across the world, even into low and middle income countries. It's a killing force. Anti-science now kills more people than things like gun violence, global terrorism, nuclear proliferation, or cyber attacks. And now it's become a political movement. In the U.S., it's linked to far extremism on the far right. Same in Germany. So this is a new face of anti-science aggression. And so we need political solutions to address this.
Anti-science aggression. Okay. Yeah. If imagine having a child who was forced to get a vaccine to go to college and drops dead on a football field. And you say something about the vaccine. You're an anti-vaccine, anti-science. You're an anti-vaccine activist. And you're worse than a terrorist. These people are nuts. It's just amazing how deadly these vaccines are, and they're still pushing it. That's the crazy thing. They never pulled this stuff. They're still pushing it, and they're going to continue. I just don't see how they, not one country has pulled it off the market yet. And that's telling you, what's the bigger plan here? I mean, that's the thing that's scary about this. It's just no vaccine in history would ever have been allowed to continue to proliferate with so many adverse effects and deaths. Just wouldn't. The swine flu vaccine, it was 25 deaths. They stopped it immediately. And that was it. God knows. Nobody knows for sure how many deaths around the world we've seen from this vaccine. How many strokes, how many adverse effects. And it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And you want to go get your booster? Go do it. Some of us, though, still have to be here to proliferate once everybody's gone. Anyway, quick 2 hours here on The Financial Physician. If you missed any of it, go to thefinancialphysician.com where we have the podcast. It'll be available right after the program's over. Love your emails, lou@thefinancialphysician.com. My office number is 732-905-8100. You want to come in for a no-obligation financial review, or you want to set up an income tax appointment, 732-905-8100. Have a great week. Remember, I'm not far right. I'm just right so far. Have a great week.